This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's B-O-B-B-Y-K-K-R-A-F-T. And you are listening to episode 35. When you get a chance, if you like what you hear, it would be awesome if you rate and review the podcast on iTunes. This really does help because I would love the feedback. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I caught up with my guest from episode 11, Mike Schellinger from microcapclub.com. When we first spoke, we discussed his life as a full-time microcap investor, as well as his approach to microcap investing. In this interview, I wanted to get his insight on 2017, trends to look out for this year, and how the recent election may affect the microcap space. But more importantly, he's one of the main contributors to microcapclub.com, and he wrote two articles that I wanted to cover at length in this interview. The articles are titled Investing Pitfalls to Avoid and Searching for Gold in SEC Filings. The goal for this episode is to learn about what Mike believes investors should look out for when looking at microcap stocks, as well as how he finds, and I quote, gold in SEC filings and what that means. Thank you again for tuning into episode 35 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Mike Schellinger, but first, a word from our sponsor. Hey everybody, Robert Kraft here, your host on the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'd like to take this moment to invite you to join me and some of the guests you may have heard on this podcast to our annual Microcap Investor Conference, the Planet Microcap Showcase, April 26th through April 28th, 2017 at none other than the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. The Planet Microcap Showcase will be 2.5 days of company presentations, networking opportunities, an educational workshop, and you'll get to meet privately in one-on-one meetings with company management of undiscovered and well-known microcap companies. There are a lot of surprises in store, and you're not going to want to miss it. So join us at the Planet Microcap Showcase, April 26th, through April 28th at the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. For more information, go to www.planetmicrocapshowcase.com and register now to reserve your spot. See you in Vegas. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Mike Schellinger back on the program from microcapclub.com. Mike, welcome back to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Bob.
It's great to have you back, and thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Yes. And so, you know, for those who may have missed our first interview, which was actually a little over a year ago, you know, what is your background, and how did you get into investing in microcap stocks?
Yeah, well, I've been a full-time investor in microcap stocks for over 10 years now. My background is I have a degree in computer engineering. And most of my corporate career was spent in managing software development for cell phones. In the early 90s, I started out investing, co-tailing my dad into investments in small banks. So those were, you know, microcap kind of companies. And then in the late 90s, I decided I wanted to start out on my own and, you know, picking out my own investment ideas. So, you know, this was actually 1999, so the bubble was in full swing. And I was, being in technology, I was kind of aware of what was going on in technology, and the valuations were kind of crazy. So I avoided technology, and as it turns out, I focused on low PE stocks. And often you find that low PE stocks are small companies, microcaps. So I kind of just fell into that area just because I was looking at low PE stocks. And the first couple of years were okay. You know, 2000 was a bit challenging, and I, you know, I made, I think, a little bit of money over 2001 to 2002. And then in 2003, I started doing really well. And 2004 through 2006 were also really good. And reached the point that my little hobby became, you know, at least a half-time job. And I couldn't do both that and my full-time job. So realized I had to make a decision and pick one or the other, and I went with my passion, which is full-time investing, and 2006 quit my corporate job and I've been a full-time investor ever since.
So Mike, we are now in 2017. You know, what are some of the themes to look out for in microcaps for 2017?
Well, I have a big prediction for you.
All
right. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So I predict that October is going to be a dangerous month for stocks.
Ooh. Oh, man. Well,
you know why?
Hold on. I'm trying to take that in. It's going to be a dangerous month. Okay. Yes. Now I would like to know why.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, it's one of the particularly dangerous months for speculating in stocks. But the other months that are dangerous are July, January, September, April, November, May, March, June, December, August, and February, which is all the months. And by the way, I stole that from Mark Twain. That's not original. But all joking aside, you know, I try not to do too much to try to predict the future of financial markets. I like to focus on just finding undervalued growing companies. And, you know, not focus on the overall market. But having said that, there's a few things that we can talk about that are trends, so or potential trends. So, you know, late last year, the interest rates, and the Fed made the decision to bump up interest rates. So it's above my pay grade as to how quickly or whether that will continue, but I think it's more likely that they move up than move down. So one of the things that I think is an important thing, you know, to be watching as a stock picker is that I would avoid companies that have high debt levels, because increase in interest rates can have a, you know, pretty negative impact on their profitability.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of hinted at my next question a little bit. So I guess you'll probably be bringing this part up again, but you know, was there anything that happened in 2016 that you think may have an effect on the microcap space in 2017? You mentioned interest rates. So is that something that you think might happen in 2016 that'll affect 2017?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's something that has the potential. I think another thing, you know, we talked about this in the last podcast that we did. This has been a multi-year trend where I've continued to see that the information flow in microcaps continues to pick up speed. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I think it's just the you know, how much we use the internet these days and how people communicate, and the information just moves around a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having said that, with the microcaps that we invest in, you know, they're still not talked about on CNBC, and they'll never really be talked about on CNBC because they're too small. So I think what investors have to do is they really have to use social media a lot, because that's how the information on these small, you know, companies gets, you know, the insight that people have, that's how it gets passed on. I mean, obviously the companies put out their press releases and their SEC filings and stuff through the formal channels, but, you know, some of the other information that people pick up on the side, maybe trends for the company or whatever, or their insight into how the company's reporting, a lot of that is all on social media. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing about that is, you know, it really forces you as an investor to try to get a deeper insight into what's going on to companies to get an edge.
Yeah, I mean, with you make a good point. They're still not being talked about on CNBC. And, you know, not just that, but even though there's more information flowing from microcaps, you know, there's also so much information flowing from all regions of the world and all different sectors and subjects, you know. So it's still, you know, there's so much saturation on the internet that it's having to, you know, find that that site or that voice that you can, you know, develop a trust in and start to really follow that, you know? I mean, I think we're on the same page in that sense, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So again, another thing in 2016, it was a big election year. You know, in your opinion, what effects could a Trump presidency have on the microcap space?
Well, I don't think there's things that I'm aware of, at least, that are specific to the microcap space. But there's a lot of things that I think will just impact, you know, financial markets or potentially impact financial markets in general, you know, probably equally in the microcap space or close to equally in the microcap space as they will for the larger companies. So I think where we really need to pay attention, you know, particularly probably in the next 6 months to a year is, you know, Trump has talked a lot about, you know, some of the changes that he wants to make. And those policy changes are going to have impacts. To the extent they happen, they're going to have impacts on microcap companies and larger companies as well. So I just picked out a few things that, you know, I know have been talked about. I'm not sure, you know, how much the you know, these things that were talked about are actually going to become reality, but these are some of the things I'm paying attention to. So, you know, any change in corporate tax rates, if the tax rates are dropped, that's going to, you know, probably be positive for stock prices because the valuation of, you know, the future earnings of companies will be higher due to lower taxes. And that might even impact some of the companies that aren't as profitable as well, just because, you know, if some companies go opposite, you know, that's kind of the tide lifts all boats. You know, there's also been discussion of an infrastructure policy to improve our infrastructure. And so if that comes to fruition, you know, I'll be looking for, and I know of some names, but I'll be, you know, watching how companies in that space, you know, are impacted by it, and I may look to buy some companies in that space. Mm-hmm. Another area, this is a little bit trickier, is healthcare. There's been lots of discussion on Obamacare and, you know, changing that, repealing it and coming up with something else. And I'm sure that's going to have some impacts in the healthcare space. I'm not sure what, but that's something I'm keeping an eye out. So just in short, again, I would just recommend to the listeners that, you know, really pay attention to what's going on in Washington, and because that may create opportunities or, you know, or impact things that you currently own that maybe you don't want to own anymore.
So as I said earlier, it's been a while since we spoke, and you've published a few very interesting articles on microcapclub.com. You know, from the article, Investing Pitfalls to Avoid, what don't you want in an investment?
Well, there's quite a few things that I look at, and it can be that, you know, a lot of companies have warts of some kind on them, so any one of these often isn't enough to shoot down an idea, but you start getting a combination of different things, and I start to look elsewhere. So the first thing, which is probably sort of an exception to that, is poor share structure. Usually pretty much scares me away. And by poor share structure, it can mean, you know, way too many options and warrants outstanding. The worst kind of poor share structure is a death spiral financing where the financing is set up so that the financer can buy stock at below the market, sell the stock, which pushes down the price of the stock, and then buy more at an even lower price. So it keeps, you know, pushing harder and harder down on the stock price, and the stock moves down, sometimes very considerably. So I avoid companies like that. Another thing I look at is the balance sheet of companies. I want, you know, a company that's got a strong balance sheet, preferably. But if it's weaker, it can be okay as long as it isn't too weak, because that may be indicative of needing to do another financing or the company not being able to meet their goals because they basically don't have the cash to do so. So, you know, that's a matter of looking at a number of things in the balance sheet just to, you know, make sure that they're okay. Another thing I look at is the quality of earnings. Not all earnings have the same quality. One of the areas that I, in particular that I look at is I look at the accounts receivable balance for a company, because there are certain companies that are able to book revenue, but they can't collect the revenue that they booked. And if you start seeing accounts receivable increasing, you know, at a rate faster than their revenue is increasing, that can be a red flag. Another thing I watch out for is low gross margin companies. I found that companies that have higher gross margins just generally, not always, but generally make better investments. And the reason for that is that if you're a low gross margin company and, you know, something happens, your costs go up by, you know, several percent, sometimes it can have a very disproportionate impact to the profitability. So that's something I watch. I like companies with some kind of a moat, so companies in the commodity space or that have commodity-like products are things that are avoid. So a commodity-like product might be, you know, say, like, I don't know, like spaghetti noodles or something like that. So, you know, they're probably pretty similar, although my Italian wife might might disagree with me there. Intellectual property risk is something I try to avoid. That comes up often in the pharmaceutical space. Excessive management compensation and lack of alignment with shareholders is something that I watch out for. You know, I want to have a management team that is going to be motivated to return shareholder value. And if they're aligned with me, I'm, you know, much more likely to make money on the investment. Something I avoid is overly promotional management. If the management team, you know, if you hear the management team talking about the stock all the time and not about the underlying business, that's maybe a sign that they're focused on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is business models with major uncontrollable risks. So things like government regulations or cyclic industries, shrinking industries. And this is really where the risk section in the SEC filing is, particularly the 10-K, is really helpful because it'll point those out. And, you know, is often where you learn about those things.
So, Mike, also another question I had regarding one of your recent articles is in the article Searching for Gold in SEC Filings, you know, what are some of the positive and negative items that we should look out for in the SEC filings?
Sure. Well, let me start maybe just sort of giving a little bit of background, because I'm not sure how many of your listeners are intimately familiar with SEC filings. Mm-hmm. But so the major filings are the quarterly reports, the 10-Q, and the 10-K, which is the annual report. And I haven't done a scientific study, but my guess is probably those reports are on the order of 10 to 20 times the size of the company press release for the respective quarters. So there's a lot more information in those quarterly filings than you're going to find in that press release. So that can be really helpful and provide you a lot of insight. Although I will say a good portion of that information is kind of boilerplate legal information. So you can, you know, don't be scared by that. You can skim through these filings and read them rather quickly. But there's often information in them that isn't as widely disseminated as what's in the press releases, and it's important to be aware of those. So let me just go through a couple of the key things that I look for. So the first thing I always look at is the commentary on the results. A company will often, you know, if revenue is up, they'll tell you why the revenue is up or maybe why the revenue is down. They'll give you some background on, you know, new trends that are happening. Maybe they had a large order, or maybe they have a new product that's really driving revenue. So it can really give you some big insight into the why behind the numbers numbers that they're reporting, which oftentimes is even more important than the numbers that they're reporting. So that's the first area. Next area I look at is backlog and deferred revenue. Companies that take a while to deliver their products often have a pretty healthy backlog and deferred revenue. And how those numbers vary can give you a pretty good insight into the future revenue prospects for the company. Sometimes companies report a good quarter, but their backlog has dropped significantly. That means the next quarter might not be as good as the prior one. So another thing is companies provide guidance sometimes in their SEC filings. So it's usually not specific, like, you know, we expect our revenue to be between X and Y next quarter and our earnings to be between A and B. But they might give you more directional information like, our revenue was up 10% this quarter because of, you know, XYZ factor, and that's something we expect to continue. Or our margins are improving because we're better managing our manufacturing process, and that, you know, those we think we can stay in the current range now, or something like that. So it can really give you some insight into how the next couple of quarters or the next year or two might play out. Sometimes companies put in major new contract wins in the filings, and those might not be put out by a press release because perhaps they're with a bigger company that doesn't want their name in a press release. Mm-hmm. The cash flow statement is something that I look at a lot. It's not commonly in a press release, but sometimes it is, but you can learn a lot by looking at the cash flow statement. So risks, we talked about that in a prior question. Share structure and dilution, that's another thing I look at. We talked about in the last question. There's legal issues that will be in those SEC filings that aren't, going to be in a press release. And sometimes those are positive for the company, sometimes they're negative, but they're important to be aware of. There's several other areas, but maybe the one last one I'll comment on is the subsequent events section. So what the SEC requires is for a quarterly report, those come out maybe, say, 45 days after, at most 45 days after the end of the quarter, and there may have been some important events that happened in those 45 days. And if there's anything material, they have to report those. So that's a great clue for the future to watch out for. So what I covered was mostly 10-Ks and 10-Ks and 10-Qs. There's also something called 8-Ks that are material events that are reported between the quarterly and annual filings, and those often contain very important pieces of information that you need to be aware of. And it can kind of cover the gamut of what I've already talked about, so I'm not going to go into detail there, but it's important to read those 8-Ks as well.
Mm-hmm. So, one thing that's been said a couple times on the podcast, and I was curious as to your opinion, is where are the new names in microcaps? It is the case that, everyone is looking for the next great new microcap investment.
Well, I know where they are. They're all on Microcap Club. No, joking aside, there are some trends we've been seeing. And one of the interesting things I want to point out is that it seems like there's a lot more interesting and growing microcap names coming out of Canada. Mm-hmm. And I suspect the reason for that has to do with, regulatory differences between the countries and maybe the hurdles for going public. I don't know of all the details of why, but what I can say is give you a few statistics from Microcap Club. So we have about, in 2016, I would say, or I think it's around 28% of the companies that were profiled were from Canada, and 66% were from the U.S. So we have a pretty high Canadian coverage, but it's smaller than the U.S. But the return of those companies that are listed in Canada was much better in 2016, even though the U.S. performance was spectacular as well. So the Canadian companies that were profiled in 2016 had a 50.7% average return, whereas the ones in the U.S. had a 22.3% average return.
Wow.
So, it's a pretty big differential, and so I don't know if that trend's going to continue. Like I said, I think it has to do with regulatory things, and who knows, that, you know, could be, back to your earlier question on Trump, you know, maybe there'll be some things that are changed there that will, you know, swing the pendulum another way, but it's a trend that I'm keeping my eyes on.
So, you know, on that note, you know, how have things progressed at the Microcap Club? You know, you brought up one trend that you've been seeing in microcaps based on what you've seen while maintaining the site. But, you know, what other trends in microcap that you've observed while, you know, looking at the site?
I don't know that there's a whole lot in the way of trends, but I can tell you maybe a little bit more about how Microcap Club has progressed. So, in 2016 was a great year for us. So we've had, in 2016, we had over 9,000 posts. So that's quite a bit of information that's flowing back and forth. Since 2011, we've had 82 companies that have doubled or more, 46 companies that have gone on to be acquired, 31 companies that have tripled or more, and 4 companies that are up over 1,000%. In 2016, sort of as I was talking about before, we had 95 new companies that were profiled. So we're up to around 500 companies total, although about 10% of them have gone on to be acquired. So there's really like 450 companies that are currently tradable that we're discussing at some level of frequency, and you know, which is a significant part of the microcap universe. So, and the companies, just to give you some more performance statistics, the companies that were profiled in 2016, we talked about Canada versus the U.S., the average return of all of them was 30%, and actually of the 30%, so that's companies that were profiled throughout the whole year, so it could have been January versus, you know, or December. Those in the first half had a 69% average return. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great year in terms of return. Mm-hmm. So one new feature that we recently added to Microcap Club that I'd like to point out is we have our Microcap Club indices. We just launched those in December, and it includes two indices. The first indice is called the Microcap Club Active Index. And it's the continuation of work I did on another website, and it's now exclusive to Microcap Club. And that indice in 2016 had a 30% return. And since its inception, October 1st, 2009, has a 563.5% return. So mm-hmm. It's done well. Mm-hmm. So, and then we also had our first Microcap Leadership Summit just out of Chicago. And we'll be having our second summit later this year.
So what are the dates for next year's Microcap Leadership Summit? And where can my audience go and buy their ticket for the event?
So the next Microcap Leadership Summit will be held on September 21st and 22nd in 2017 at the Westin Chicago Northwest. So the same location it was last year. It's a two-day event with speakers on the first day and company presentations from the best microcap companies we can find on the second day. And we've got some great speakers lined up. I'll just name them quickly. Shane Parrish from Farnham Street, Morgan Housel is a partner at Collaborative Funds and a former columnist for Motley Fool in the Wall Street Journal. Jeff Graham, the author of the book Dear Chairman, and Brent Beshore, the founder of Adventure ES. The event's available both for member and subscribers of Microcap Club. So if you're currently a member or subscriber, you just have to register at Microcap Club website. And if you aren't currently a member or subscriber, please take a look at our Join Now page. And if you're interested in attending the Microcap Leadership Summit, please consider joining us.
And I'm sure we'll see you and Ian up there speaking as well. You know, I'm just taking a guess. You know,
well, we probably won't have a speech, but we'll be talking here and there throughout the event.
Nice, Mike. Well, thank you again for joining me. And where can my audience go and follow you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is at MikeDDKing.
Mike, thank you so much for joining me again. And I look forward to seeing you in Chicago and hopefully even sooner than that.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you as well.
Talk soon. Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Mike, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.